Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to this. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that takes itself and the game incredibly serious today because we've just finished the second day and the fourth of the quarterfinals.
We have.
I am astonished with what I've just seen.
which idiots were predicting a Northern Hemisphere whitewash?
Yeah, well, I mean, what has this told us? The four teams that are through are basically the teams that you'd expect, with the exception of Argentina. So, the most successful Northern Hemisphere team, the two most successful Southern Hemisphere teams, plus one other.
Yeah, historically, yes. And I bet Argentina, I bet their record of making semis, well, it's certainly better than Ireland's. it's better than Wales's, I would imagine, not looking at the facts in front of me, but I would imagine. So, yeah, entirely predictable. Entirely predictable by, say, I don't know, Brian Moore, who recorded a generic preview.
Brian Moore was more correct than us, I think. We need to give him credit.
More correct than anything. But he could have been more correct than any of us recording this 10 years ago.
Yeah, do you know, to call this World Cup, you literally just needed to go off historic data.
Yes.
That's all we needed to do. You needed to use cliches, go off historic data, and you'd be absolutely fine. I don't even know. Where do you want to start? Where do you want to start?
Oh, so
I know. Let's start here, right? Let's start with this, which is, this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Yes.
I'm here with Phil.
Hello.
And we will be joined by Tim, who is in his Metcons interviewing people in France at the moment, isn't he? So he'll be calling in, and you can find us on Patreon, which is, of course, very important. Loads of new signups. Thank you very much. And you can contact us on email, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Now we can start.
Fantastic. And where do you want to start? Like, we're normally... we're primarily an English rugby podcast because that's where we live.
Yeah,
that's where we're from.
Yep.
It's the club game that we watch most. It's the international game that we watch most. I feel like we should not start with England. We should start with either of the British summertime 8 PM kickoffs this week, either Saturday or Sunday.
Jesus, I mean, I think Tim will want to talk about which one. Which one would he not want us to start with?
I don't know. He wouldn't want us to start with level 7 rugby, that's for sure.
Right. Let's start with Ireland. Where did you watch it?
I watched this at home.
Did you?
I did. Watched it at home, and I like these 8 PM kickoffs.
I do as well. Perfect time.
I like watching them at home. I like watching them at home without my phone, with no distractions, so I can really get into it and not be influenced by Twitter or anything else. This was an unbelievable game.
I cannot remember a single second of this game because I was out on the town from 2 o'clock, my first beer in 10 weeks. I hit my target weight, which is my precursor to go out. That was like my qualification thing. So I had to hit a certain weight. And then I went and drank myself silly all day.
So you're like a fighter, like a boxer.
Absolutely.
A UFC fighter.
Yep.
Got to make weight.
Got to make weight to go boozing. So I made weight, went out boozing. I just remember the heartbreak of the Irish. I just remember watching it and thinking, I cannot believe they've lost that. So I simply can't believe it.
New Zealand, let's talk kind of macro before getting into the micro. New Zealand did some amazing things at times. I think Ireland were the better team for most of the game, or certainly had the upper hand for most of the game. And I looking back on this, I think Ireland errors cost Ireland the win. And those errors, you could name the Sheehan and Van der Flier misread on Moonga.
That was horrendous.
It's amazing acceleration. But yeah, there's a total misread there between those two.
I mean, to see a team as good as Ireland, because they're amazing, to see them concede a first phase try
from a line out from 50 plus metres out,
it's just unheard of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it was 9 to 10, 10 carry.
Yeah.
That was the move.
Yeah, if you were talking to someone who's never seen the game before, they go, oh yeah, that was a really nice move from New Zealand. But actually, that is about as catastrophic as an intercepted pass. And that's the level of error it is.
Yeah, perhaps even more so.
Yeah.
Because intercepts, they do happen when you're kind of pushing the envelope. This was just, it was a first phase carry by a 10.
Yeah, I don't know how you just read that.
So you've got that error. You've got the Sexton, he only went for 3 points once. Sorry. He went for 3 points twice and was 50-50, missed one of them.
Yep.
Got one of them. So you got the Sexton and the it was an easy kick that he missed. So you've got that. You've got the after the penalty try where Ireland get line out in the corner again, and it was Kelleher. The Ireland maul is powering over the New Zealand line, and he breaks too early and gets held up by Jordy Barrett, which the goal line dropout from was dropped by Caelan Doris to just relieve. It should have been 7 points to Ireland, and it relieved 50 yards of pressure.
So like, how many errors did Chris Lowe was made by Lansterman?
Well, now you've mentioned it, actually, every single one of those that I've just mentioned.
Oof. It almost sounds like the welfare policy that they've instituted doesn't work for really high intensity games.
maybe there is some kind of correlation or causation between Stuart Lancaster and these boys, his influence over these boys, and choking at the highest level.
Oh, it is devastating, though. I mean, they really believe they are the best in the world. It's come down. They were that much of a bump. When I was watching them, they looked like the best in the world.
They'd lost one in 20 odd games going into this. They were the number one ranked team in the world. They were the favourites in this game, although not as, according to the bookies, not as great a favourites as you would think. Like, it was almost 50-50 according to the bookies. But if you listened to or read the media, you would probably think it was that Ireland were heavy favourites, or they were, according to the media.
I think they were. I mean, if I was to play this game again, I'd have Ireland winning by a big score. And I think that's probably laid out when you look at how they went up against New Zealand last time they played over three games. They absolutely wiped the floor with them in two of them. So I think they would win. And they are probably the most impressive team throughout the tournaments in the group stage. That manhandling of South Africa was absolutely amazing. And then what they did to Scotland, they just shut them down completely. These guys were the favourites. They were the best team in the tournament. And I'd love to know what I said. Easy enough, because I'm a podcaster and I could look it up. But I'm pretty sure I said, when they were celebrating their Six Nations win, that this is the end for them. Like, they were celebrating that.
You did. You said
that Grand Slam.
You said now that they've won the Grand Slam, that's it. They've lost their opportunity to win the next two.
Yep.
And by the next two, you meant Leinster in the Heineken Cup and Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, I felt
that. Now it's quite an easy thing to say because they at that stage they were one of 20 teams in the Heineken Cup and one of 20 teams in the World Cup. They're slightly in your favour.
Well, there we go.
They're just going to play the best teams in Europe and the best teams in the world and over again.
If you think
maybe,
you know, don't celebrate the Grand Slam in a World Cup year
for 3 days.
Yeah, maybe don't do that. Maybe just be a little bit more humble. In the words of Stuart Lancaster, right? Get back to work.
Be more Lancaster.
Yeah, not in a world. Yeah, you can celebrate your Grand Slam in a non-World Cup year. That's fantastic, but you've still got work to do.
celebrating peaking too early.
Yeah.
A classic. It's like in 2018 when we were in Monaco and Ireland won Team of the Year and Johnny Sexton won Player of the Year and they peaked too early. And it is, this Ireland team, I'm a huge, huge fan. I wanted them to win this game. I backed them to win this game. And I really, really like the way that they go about their business. In all aspects, they're so well drilled in defence, save for that Will Jordan try. They're so well drilled at set piece, although their line-out got fluffed a bit that we might talk about a bit later. Their attacking play is so good and so consistent. They've got so many likeable players. But with all that said, it is still objectively funny that they go out again in the quarterfinals.
There will be lots of Irish people who are very distraught about this. Very distraught. And you understand why, don't you? Because they think this is their golden generation.
Mm.
But let me reassure you Irish fans out there, there's nothing to worry about. Irish rugby is probably one of the few bright spots in the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
They are very well run. And I remember when they had their last golden generation, it turned out they weren't the golden generation.
You're right.
In fact, it was just the beginning.
The precursor for this generation.
Yeah, and I actually think the next lot of lads coming through will be better again. Because Ireland know what they're doing now. They've got their production line set up. They've got their scouting in order. They just know what they're doing. I don't think this is the end for Ireland. Far from it. I think it's just the beginning.
I think you're probably right. With maybe a couple of caveats. And that's, I think there's two generational players in that team who will be hard to replace.
Who are you thinking? Sexton?
Sexton is one.
I think he'll be easy to replace. I think,
but they've been trying for about 10 years.
I think one of the biggest problems that they've had over 10 years is not just replacing him, just replacing. Because as soon as you get someone else to step into those shoes, they'll be fine. Wales have Dan Biggar. And if they get rid of him, they'll have basically some no-name in Costello. And do you know what? He'll be fine. He'll get his experience and he'll be fine. But because they've kept Sexton around for so long, and he's prevented other lads having enough game time to really shine, it's a problem. And not only that, it cost them a fortune to do this. Like it's keeping for the last 10 years has cost them a fortune, because not only do you have to pay him as the best paid player, you've also got to pay someone else who's nearly as good as him to play when he's not playing. And you don't get the benefit of playing that player in your national team on a regular basis.
The bit I would say to that is they have tried. They've tried to wean themselves off Johnny, and for various different reasons, Carberry, injuries.
Yep.
Paddy Jackson.
Stuff.
Other things, not non-injuries, but other reasons. What's his name? Ross Byrne and others, bringing Billy Byrne in. Yep. They tried Jack Carty. They've now got Jack Crowley. There's lots of names. So I don't think it's for a lack of trying. And this is more my point, which is he is more of a generational player.
Yeah, I think they've made him into one, though.
One of those comes around every so often. So that's one.
Do you know when you say he's a generational player, though? I'm just going to push back on that. If you look at the Six Nations teams, is he the best fly half in Six Nations?
Probably not at 38. He started Lions tours before, so he was for a good chunk of time. Yeah. 2013, 2017.
And who is the other generational player which you're looking at there?
And now this is because he's so unique. Henshaw would be the closest thing to him in the Ireland setup, but Ireland don't breed too many players like him. Bundiaki.
Yeah, well, you say...
And he has been...
I mean, Ireland, you could argue, don't breed any like him.
Not too many. He has been absolutely phenomenal recently.
He has been very good.
He's just been outrageous. Like, in the South Africa game, he was amazing.
He was absolutely rocking this game too.
He really was. He's 75 metres made, 7 defenders beaten in this game. And the try that he scored, which was the turning point, or it felt like the turning point for Ireland getting back in the game, because it looked like, I think it was 10-0 at that stage, or maybe 10-3, but it looked like Ireland could easily drift out of it.
Yeah.
And he's difficult to replace.
So, for me, Ireland-New Zealand is a classic, can both teams please lose? Like, how does this happen?
Like when you're watching semi-lineup against Faz today.
Yeah, exactly. How can these guys both knock each other out? You know?
Oh, Bristol versus Bath.
Yeah. So, sorry, that's what I was going to say. So, on the one hand, I just wanted Ireland to go out in the quarterfinals because I love the storyline. I love all that. On the other hand, New Zealand did something in the week which made me want to vomit. They dropped a player.
They did.
For discipline reasons.
They didn't say what those discipline reasons were.
I just hate it. I hate it.
But, so, it depends what it is.
I really wanted them to go home then. Oh, look, we're really good so, people who've gone home.
I have no problem with that. It was, what did Fozzie say? It's discipline, it's dealt with. Yeah, I still love him. Don't really like the last remark.
I still love him.
From a coach.
But, do you know, I hate it so much because, presumably, if this is anything like the Aaron Smith discipline, you get disciplined by your own mates. It's like...
Well, so it depends what it is. Because, like, I'll give you an example. And it's maybe one that you could get on board with. I, a long time ago, played with a scrum half.
Yeah.
Who always cut runs short. He always cut corners on runs. So we're doing defensive drills, like up-down drills, yeah, and that kind of stuff. He never hit the line and get back into the line. So he's risking conceding a penalty every time. Now, if you're cutting corners in a fitness drill like that, what are you going to be doing in the game?
Gamesmanship, I hope.
So, well, giving penalties away. There's gamesmanship, but there's also giving penalties away. So, if it's something like that, like a performance related, like imagine the guy who's double counting his muscle ups, yeah. JB.
Okay.
So he's got to do 10, but he only does 5, and he marks down 10.
But we've got two different things here, right? So. What you're talking about is standards. Like, if you're not training well, you should be dropped, right? If you're giving away penalties, you should be dropped. But if you decide to go out for an extra beer, or you know, you snuck a girl into the hotel room,
but we don't know. It could be.
It must be something like that. It's not like, oh yeah, we dropped him because he was short on shuttle runs.
Might be.
Or Lester Fayanga. He was light. Is that how you say his name? Lester
Fayanga Onuku.
Fayanga Onuku. If it's just for discipline and. I remember with Aaron Smith, it's like, I'm sure they got his mates around to punish him so the coaches can wash their hands of the discipline issue. I mean, imagine if I had to discipline you, Phil.
We've been there in the past, JB.
what's punishment? Nothing. Grow up.
Get me Aaron Smith's paddle.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, I
don't like it.
I kind of do get it. Like, The one that sticks out is there was a story from, was it 2015, where Australia brought back all their old boys, brought back Gitto and Adam Ashley Cooper and Drew Mitchell for like one last dance. And they got them to a World Cup final.
Yeah.
But there was some discipline around bringing girls back to a room, but it was like their sister or cousin. And it's
oh,
like,
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. There was, but it broke a heart. Like, this is the story that... They did something, it should be legitimate, but it broke a hard and fast rule, and therefore they were kind of punished because of it.
I have so little time for this.
Yeah, I have very little time for that.
And also, do you know what the All Blacks did this week as well?
Go
the
on.
Baggage train.
Now,
carried their own bags.
I thought you were going to mention that. I wanted New Zealand to lose just because of that.
Sickening.
That is.
And then they're going to parade. Like,
but it seemed less efficient. Like, it seemed dreadful. It was just.
Oh, was so. Anyway. So what? I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed that they're throwing out. I wish Ireland had one. So let's talk about the actual game itself. What are the turning points for you here? What were the things which really stood out that New Zealand did? Because for all of Ireland's choking, New Zealand played bloody well.
They did. They took their chances brilliantly. We've already spoke about the Will Jordan try. They took their first two tries. The Lester Fayanga Onuku. And the Ardie Surveyor one in opposite corners, fantastically, and something they exploited, which was clear to me that it was a pre-planned thing where they've seen a glimmer of space in the Ireland defensive line with the little chips over the top,
yeah,
and the Bowden Barrett one for the Fayanga Onuku try, I think, was just beautiful,
wasn't it?
It's stunning. And then, so that was an amazing passage of play because it was the Bowden Barrett chip, and Bowden Barrett gets nailed by James Lowe.
Yeah, absolutely, he really does.
Absolutely nailed. but still has the wherewithal to look for the offload, doesn't quite get it, and then they go wide, and it's the little 1-2 between...
Stunning.
Fanga Nuku and Rico Ioane. That was incredible. So, phenomenal start for New Zealand. They get that. They got the penalty, then they get that. And then try to remember the conversion. Perhaps even another penalty. So was it 13-0 up? They were
13-3 was.
Yeah,
13. Yeah, 13-0, 13-3.
Yes, that's how it went. 13-0, 13-3. Then you get the Bundiaki try, which was, you felt like, if Ireland don't score that, if Bundy doesn't cut back inside and beat however many players and score that, you felt like the game was going to start drifting away from them.
Mm.
But they never let it drift away from them. Every time New Zealand scored a try, they'd either, well, they'd get back into it somehow, one way or another, they'd get back into it.
Well, they just stayed in the fight.
Yes. Couple of areas of interest. I'd like to get your take, although given that it was kind of 7 hours after you started drinking, maybe difficult. Line out and scrum in particular. Line out, Ireland fluffed a couple in important positions, but also made a few in important positions.
Yeah.
Particularly in the second half, they got a few fantastic line outs, one of which led to the try, one of which led to the Kelleher kind of early break in the Jordy Barrett amazing hold up. Scrum time, though. Ireland scrum, it was really interesting to me because it looked to me like Ireland were dominant at scrum time when they turned the screw.
Yes.
However, they got penalised on a number of occasions. Andrew Port was penalised on a number of occasions for either stepping out or boring in or both.
Going around the side was...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that is necessarily what happened. I'd have to look at it again on like a spider cam.
Yeah.
That would be a better way to do it. I like the sort of French way of officiating a scrum, which is just the dominant team wins. Like if you want to step on the side, well, you got to do something about it as the opposition prop. You can't bore in too much, but if you do bore in, there becomes other opportunities. When a scrum is dominant, I very rarely like them to be penalised. Remembering those scrums now, Porter did get pinged two or three times.
Yeah, he got pinged, and it was actually...
I didn't like them. I didn't think that they were legitimate penalties.
And it was where Ireland were really dominant. One or two where De Groot and Cody Taylor were flying saucered, where they were like on top.
Yeah. The question then becomes, right, if you are dominant and you're going forward, are you dominant because you're cheating? Probably not. So why would you cheat?
Yeah.
Why would you do this? You know, that's why I'm a little bit suspicious.
But I thought Ireland could learn a bit from the South Africa scrum in that regard. Obviously, everyone can learn a bit from the South Africa scrum, although England employed...
Again, like the South Africa scrum, just go back to that. When they won a penalty against France, and again, it was for walking on the side, I didn't think that was... France really went at them. And I thought France, at that point, that was a turning point of a game, because to me, France looked like a scrum which could hold their own. But that penalty then ruins them.
Mm.
So again, I'll have to see it again.
But what I was going to say was, South Africa, from watching them in this tournament particularly, I think they, and this happened in this game, it happened in the Scotland-South Africa game and the Ireland-South Africa game, they bide their time for the scrum penalties. They're happy to show the ref a nice picture for several scrums early in the game, just hold it up, not create a lottery, just keep it nice and steady, nice and steady, no pushing, nothing, no dominance, and then they turn it on.
Yeah.
And Ireland, I think, tried to do too much too soon. And I am not a scrummager at all, but Port on New Zealand's ball, the Ireland went for them several times, like over and over and over again, and got penalty, penalty, penalty.
Yeah.
What they should have done after the first penalty, to me, with a bit of game theory, is, right, we're just going to show a really nice picture the next few times.
Yeah.
Show it's not us causing, disrupting it, show it's not us being illegal, and then when Winsbarn believes us that we are legit, then we go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think
that was a schoolboy error.
And the thing is, you don't actually know what's going on there unless you know. So if you were going to go all eight against them, you'd need to know what the decision is. And conversely, if you just feel you're going forward, well, you don't stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you need to actually ask them what they were doing.
But that, the scrums scrums in particular for Ireland were a weak point. Lineouts, a couple of fluff lines, but I think generally pretty good.
Yeah. So New Zealand in the back, that's quite disappointing.
They are
one of the worst teams in, one of their worst teams probably in the last two decades. It's not that bad, is it?
I mean
they're quite good.
It's still a phenomenal team. The bit that they miss, and this is, I guess it's making the same point again, that Ireland did not capitalise on this. I think that New Zealand's weakness, and I said it last week, is their front row.
Agreed.
It's their front row, and it's not their front row around the park necessarily. I mean, Cody Taylor's brilliant around the park, and Dane Coles or Takiyahu, who is the third choice, are brilliant around the park, but they are not brilliant at scrum time.
They're not brilliant at scrum time, and I tell you the other thing as well. They play differently. They don't have monstrous ball carriers. Like, they could do with one really big ball carrier in there. I mean, they've got nice ball carriers. People can move their feet. Audie Surveyor is not bad.
He's a phenomenal ball carrier, but he's not a heavy traffic carrier.
No, he's more like a Ben Earl, isn't he? That kind of thing.
Ben Earl or a Ludlam type player.
Yeah, so yeah, they could do with just one absolute mutant. I mean, Retallack's very nice.
Shannon Frizzell, but he had a very quiet game.
Yeah.
Shannon Frizzell's the one, I think, who can bring that heavy traffic. He didn't do much. I have to say, though, I thought Sam Kane had a good game.
Sam Kane did have a good game, one of his better games, I'd say. And I think he's phenomenally disappointing every time I watch him.
He had a great game. His hit for the early
turnover
penalty, he hit Caelan Dorris. And
that's it.
It was a one-on-one tackle with Caelan Dorris in the middle of the park, and he nailed him. And Ardie Surveyor went over the top, jackaled over the top, and...
Hello,
mate. How are you?
I feel sick.
Oh, no. Been drinking again,
Tim? No, not ill. No, just from watching that game. Oh, my God. Sorry, I know I'm jumping in and you've already talked about it loads. So
no, we haven't. We're waiting for you. We're waiting for you, mate. We're just polishing off the Ireland All Blacks game whilst we're waiting for you because we assumed you'd want to talk about it.
Oh, well, no, I'm happy to jump in whenever. It's absolutely fine. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Right, so just one question quickly. Is that the greatest weekend of rugby that there has ever been?
I think the two 8 p.m. kickoffs are two of the best games I've ever seen.
The England game was very good.
The England games, and the other two games were nowhere near as high quality, but you did not know until the last few minutes in any of the game. They were all up for grabs until, I mean, it was only the Nicolas Sanchez try in the Argentina game.
Yeah.
And the England game, it was the last second, 82 minutes. So
yeah. And I can understand the temptation to moan about the draw if you're from Ireland or you're from France. I totally understand the temptation, but you cannot have both things. You cannot have the top four teams in the world meeting at the semi-finals and have the weekend that we've just experienced. That was one for the ages. So,
and if you're going to win the World Cup, which is the ultimate goal here,
yeah,
you got to beat all these teams. So grow up and beat them. I just don't understand this, like, this nonsense about the draw. Yes, it's irritating, I guess, that England have gone so far. But you know, you've got to beat these teams. You've got to beat them.
Well, England are objectively better than Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah.
And much, much better than Scotland. And better than France. So there you go.
Wow. Yeah. So, we've just done Ireland, New Zealand. I think we all agree. And the massive bottlers and New Zealand aren't as bad as we thought.
This is why I was sat in the waiting room going, I need to get in there before JB goes and just slags off Ireland.
We have been very complimentary to Ireland. Although we did note that it is, even though Ireland are an incredible team, it is still objectively funny that they have gone out in the quarters again.
Yeah. I hope Paris fans are looking forward to the Lancaster era.
Well, they've never had a history of being amazing anyway, so...
That's true, but at least they'll be great people.
Or maybe they've had a history of bottling it.
Yeah, maybe. This might be a perfect... This might be perfect for them.
Bottle squared.
This will be harder to. This will be the hardest one to take by a mile.
Yes,
because of arriving at the World Cup as the number one team, playing so well. Yeah, this will be. But I'm sure you have talked about the New Zealanders. But I'm sure you mentioned there's been some redemption arcs Sam Kane's the redemption arc that Sam Kane is on is amazing. And there's quite a lot of...
Seems to have cut out. Quite a lot of what? What do you think he's going to say there?
Camembert?
People. Can I have been guilty of kind of just casually writing? Not writing Sam Kane.
Cutting it in and out. Tim.
Oh, sorry. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, sorry.
You're basically singing the praises of Sam Kane.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But I was saying his redemption arc is amazing, and there's a few players like that.
I thought Jordy Barrett looked like a world-class operator.
Yes. But there's a few players at the World Cup that look like they're on redemption arcs.
Ooh. Who else have you got in mind?
Because, well, we can talk about this game later, but that's fine. But I was quite upset. No, not upset, that's the wrong word. I was irritated, I was irked by Owen Farrell being booed when his name got announced when the teams were running through the team sheet. You'll love it, JB.
I wonder why that happened. I mean, look, I paid a lot of money for that.
But he got heavily booed and then put in a excellent performance.
He was okay. He's all right.
He played very well, mate. He played very well. And Sam Kane, I remember looking at it. It was just the look on his face when he walked out the tunnel. I was like, oh, hello.
This is interesting, isn't it? There are quite a few national captains that just are not very well liked. It's cynical national captains. So, like, this will probably get me cancelled. I'm not a massive Khaleesi fan. Don't think he's that good. Certainly don't think he's the best seven in South Africa.
I could watch him sing the national anthem all day.
Yeah, but the captain is something very sort of... I don't know what it is. He says something about that team, doesn't he? And sometimes they're picked when they're not necessarily the best player. And I don't know what it is. That's why Owen Farrell irks me so much. Sam Kane irks me. Khaleesi, not as much as those two, in fairness. Who's the Ireland captain? Sexton.
Sexton.
Yeah, not a fan. Scotland?
Jamie Ritchie.
I love him. I think he's amazing.
Wales, Jack Morgan.
Jack Morgan, amazing. Yeah, I don't know why. The players that are picked as captain because they're just the best, hardest guy that they've got, I love. But the guy who's picked as captain because he's like the company man, I just can't really like him.
Argentina, Matera.
Perfect.
Although he missing the weekend. Tim, you're more on the ground. Do you know if Matera will be fit for next week?
No, he's been replaced.
He's definitely out.
Oh, he's out.
He's out. Yeah, gutted. Not in a Mickey Flanagan way.
Gutted.
Oh, no. That is awful. Yeah.
But Kremer was massive for Argentina. Anyway, we should talk about the game we've just watched because it was one of the greatest games of rugby of all time.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, if Ireland versus New Zealand was two teams that I would wish could both lose, this is two teams I wish I could both win.
Oh, dear.
What did we just experience?
That was a phenomenal game.
Well, that's the right word. That wasn't a rugby, that was an experience.
That first
Can you
half...
imagine how it feels to be French or South African right now? Imagine you were French or South African and you were doing this podcast. I think I'd just be emotionally spent. I can't do it.
Yeah, the adrenaline would be off the charts following that game. The stress levels as well.
Yeah. It was incredible. I mean, okay, so the first half is the single best half of rugby. I don't know, actually, because Ireland-South Africa was good.
South Africa was amazing.
And Ireland-France was good.
Ireland-France this year was amazing. The both halves of that Ireland-New Zealand game, the first half of this was unreal.
No, the first half of this was the best. It was, what was it, six tries?
Yeah, three tries each. Starting in the fourth minute.
I mean, they were different. Three tries each is great. You know, I think you'd have to really listen back to what we said about Ireland versus South Africa, because the start of that game with very few tries, but one try each all game, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah,
it's hardly anything.
Really low scoring.
But so that was superior to this game in terms of just the sheer defensive physicality which was on display, particularly first half. I've never seen anything like that. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again. This was different because it was attacking masterclass. And I said to Phil, as soon as Phil came in to watch the second half of me, I was like, this is the most intelligent rugby I've ever seen.
There was some weird things. Like, as an example that everyone spotted, the mark by, was it Valencia?
Yeah.
Damien Willemsey, marks it and calls a scrum, which I have never, ever seen before.
Has he got the authority to do that? I mean, I know he has by the letter of the law, but imagine you're the... I mean, usually that's a captain's decision.
Well, whoever... who it might have been... but that was... I'm just imagining... Razzy Erasmus with his light. He's got a light, yeah, for scrum off a mark. That was a pre-planned call. So that's one that everyone spotted. One that probably everyone did spot, but the D'Alande try. Did you see how South Africa lined up for the D'Alande try? So there was a...
Go on.
There was a ruck. It's open play. Ruck on the left-hand side of the field. South Africa attacking. And basically, the whole of the South Africa players who were on their feet, not involved in the ruck, just all stood on the right-hand side touchline. So you had Libok, yep, as 10 behind the ruck, and then you had a 30-yard gap. There was no one.
Really?
There was no one for him to, yep, pass to. So there was about 7 or 8 players under a crossfield bomb.
Wow. Yeah, including Etzebeth, who competed for the first one, which led for the Arendt to try. And then when they did the kick from right to left, Peter Steph de Toy was under it.
Yes.
And competed enough before D'Alende went and scored it. It was like, I think that might be there's two stories of this game. I think it's the ability of South Africa to absorb French pressure in the first parts of each half.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was tactical genius of South Africa, because I don't know what they saw in the French. I wouldn't even know where to start about what they spotted with the French team or what plan they came up with to do exactly what you just described, Phil. But it was clearly by design, and it led to two tries. And also in that first half, 3 attacks, 3 tries, and the rest of the time they were defending.
I think Jack,
incredible.
Jacques Nienaber. It must be one incredibly intelligent guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he does operate on a different level. We spoke about the high tackle stuff, didn't we, against Ireland?
Yeah.
Like, they don't commit high tackles.
Yeah, yeah.
They just don't do that.
There was obviously the Etzebeth yellow card, which was just he got his body in the wrong position.
Yeah.
But yeah, they really don't. They're for such big blokes who hit so hard, their biometrics, body angles, whatever you want to call it, their positioning is so good to not risk it.
I mean, for a lot of people... And a lot of organisations and countries, when you have like a super strength, you tend to neglect everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes your strengths overplayed can become your weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that Saudi Arabia doesn't have a thriving tourist economy, for instance, right?
Although, if MBS gets his way.
Yes, quite. Like, South Africa being so massive, you think, oh, well, they'll just go and do that. But they work so hard on other things, like their tactical ability. And we spoke last week in the lead-up. So how does someone beat Ireland then? It's going to be with some unconventional tactics. They have bought into finding space through kicks more than anyone. And other teams have played with this. I mean, a lot of teams have looked at it in the past. I don't know if you remember, I picked Dom Barrow for fantasy rugby because Leicester were playing with this. They were trying to put second rows on the wing in order to catch balls, and it just didn't work. But maybe they just didn't buy into it enough.
Or maybe they didn't have the level of thinking behind it that South Africa do.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense it would work, but we're just not bright enough to put it all together yet.
Mm.
That was Aaron Major, actually, who came up with that.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't get enough of a crack at the whip at Leicester?
No, I guess they were competing things with Aaron Major and Richard Cockerell? Yeah, Cockers wanted to do fairly different things.
Who got fired so Matt O'Connor could come back? Was that Major, or was he after?
Yes. So Cocker gets fired first. 2 weeks later, Major goes.
Yeah.
And then O'Connor comes in. And then he goes.
God, what a mess!
What a mess!
Anyway, we're not here to talk about the history of Leicester Tigers DORs.
No. Well, they got the right one eventually.
I'm just gonna let me credit the DORs a bit more, and this is something you've talked about plenty in the past, JB, about the people that are on the pitch at the end of a match being important, and sometimes the people get hung up on who's starting a game versus who should be on the bench, as if it's first choice and second choice starting bench. And as soon as I saw the, it was two things. It was when I saw the South Africa team announced with those four, at least four World Cup winners sat on the bench. And then especially, I think one of my thoughts after the Wales game, when they brought off, Argentina had like 300 caps worth of players on the bench to bring on. When Wales had kids to replace Dan Biggar and Liam Williams, it was at that point I went, ah.
Makes a difference, doesn't it?
Finals. Maybe this is why Jacques Nienaber and Razi Erasmus have got four World Cup winners on the bench. And so it proved.
Yeah. And there was so that is a really interesting point, Tim. So the South Africa bench, obviously, Razi and Nienaber have experimented with a 6-2 split, a 7-1 split, even the historic 8-0 split.
Love it.
But to have three backs on the bench, and it's three incredibly experienced, like basically relinquishing pace for experience. So Faf, Pollard and Willie LaRue, who are all in those backline positions, whereas you would often be seeking, I don't know, someone maybe like Rio Dyer, coming off the bench as an example, or a Damian McKenzie type.
I wish.
Absolutely.
So, Tim, tell me this. You're a media man. You're on the inside. Jack
Nienaber
was interviewed before the game. He said, you know, how are you going to defeat this French defence? And he said something like, oh, we'll have to execute well and not make mistakes. So what a waste of my time. What a waste of his time. What a waste of the interviewer's time. What a waste, right? Now, he's going to play a game, and he's on there in like 10 minutes. There should be some mandated thing, right, where you have to actually speak, because I want to know the theory behind having four players. What does he expect Faf de Klerk to do when he comes on? You know, why can't he say we want to out-physical them to start with? Why can't he say, I mean, no one's going to hear it except for the audience. Mm. Why can't he just say these things and give us a clear indication of what he wants to do? No one's going to change their team.
Did you see? So I tend to agree, but it's often, certainly in press conferences. I always watch the press conferences before and after. There's so many dull questions about how does this make you feel, about what does it mean to you, and it's like, well, come on, ask about tactics or positioning or strategy or the bench and the lineup and that kind of stuff. I can't remember what I was going to say then.
That'll do.
Yeah.
It should be treated as...
What I was going to say was, did you see Razzie's tweet this week?
No.
Which was...
No.
So he tweeted something along the lines of 5+3, 6+2,
oh, yes.
7+1, 8+0, and then 4+4? And like, I think it may be the thinking emoji. Like,
and then tagged Matt Williams.
Yeah, very. I mean, if they'd have gone 4+4, because on some of those things, like that crossfield kick, where basically they took away the option for Liebock to pass pretty much, and just put the option for the crossfield kick, but like, had seven players out there. That's the kind of thing where, because that worked, it looks like absolute tactical genius. Because that led to the deal, it led directly to the D'Alande try. It looks like absolute tactical genius. If that, if the ball bounces slightly differently, it ends up in French hands and they score a 50-meter try.
Not so much.
You look like it. So it's a bit of the rubber, the green leads to us perhaps occasionally overthinking intellect.
Except for, they did it three times.
They did that several times, yeah.
And even when they were clearing their lines, they were still kicking short and contestable.
And
the contested kick is a wonderful thing.
They also did, like we mentioned before, with the scrumming the mark, which is high. I think a bit of it from the South Africa team is just change the picture, like force the opposition to think about things that they've never thought about before. Because those two things really do change the picture. I've never seen a scrum from a mark before.
And I've never seen a charge down conversion.
I've never seen a charge down. Not.
Yeah, oh my God, I was just going to mention that. When you think of the tiny moments, Marnie Libok's conversion from the touchline.
Yes.
On the first try.
Yeah.
When all the talk about his goal kicking.
Yeah.
Cheslin Kolbe, charge down. You're so right. I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Although Cheslin Colby's drop goal attempt.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? So Marnie Libok was the one that nailed a touchline conversion. Andre Pollard comes on, and the first thing they do is go for the corner and then convert.
Yeah.
With that Etzebeth carry.
That Etzebeth carry was monstrous. Absolutely monstrous.
He had a game for the ages. He was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why was this game? I mean, I think there's a worthwhile question to ask. Why was this game, the Ireland game and the Ireland South Africa game, what was it about them that made them so amazing? And if we can put our finger on that, we should then market rugby in that way and no other way.
So I think there's multiple things. So I think one is absolutely 100% the physicality.
I agree.
100%.
You have to sell the physicality. First and foremost, it's not about bad carrying. It's not about about the physicality. Because it's that physicality which allows you to really admire. I mean, I think New Zealand scored one try. It was just a basic 3-on-2. Just admiring the brilliance of the skills because of the pressure. I mean, the skills aren't that brilliant, but they are under pressure.
Exactly the second point I was going to make, is the consistency of the skills at the highest level of pressure. Yeah. And a great example, sadly it was all in vain, but that, the 37 or 38 phases that Ireland played at the end of that game.
Yeah.
And I made the comparison when we were watching the France game, JB, when France were basically in the same position as... Well, actually, they're in a better position than Ireland were, because they just needed 3 points... Well, they just needed 2 points, but they needed a penalty or a drop goal. So they didn't have as much to do from Ireland, and they just looked spent. The shape in their attack went out, like, was all over the place.
Yeah.
Guys in ones and twos, guys too sideways flat, running. Guys too deep. Even Dupont looked out on his feet.
It turns into schoolboy rugby. Literally schoolboy rugby.
Whereas Ireland, for those 37, 38 phases, they were so well drilled. They were so well organised. They were carrying so well. Such a high standard. The last time I'd seen that kind of cohesion and consistency at that stage of the game was Ireland versus New Zealand in 2016, I want to say, before Ireland beat New Zealand for the first time. And it was the other way round. It was where Ireland were in the lead, New Zealand needed to go 80 metres with ball in hand to score a converted try, and they did. And it was at that level that Ireland were performing. And that is phenomenal.
So 38 phases is a weird place to find yourself.
It certainly is.
Now, this can go one of two ways, 38 phases. You can have... So the best team ever, in my opinion, to play phase rugby like that was Exeter.
But Exeter was different. Exeter would get 30, 40 phases, but they were pick and goes. This was playing 1 and 2 outs, 30-plus phases.
So I actually think those sort of... To be 38 phases deep in a game probably means your attack is not firing. You've had 38 chances to do something. So you have to be practicing to that level consistently. If you're that high in your phase count, but you've got nowhere to go.
They have no choice.
Got nowhere to go.
Ordinarily, they would have put boot to ball.
Yeah.
But they can't. They have to retain it. It was the only time in that game, it was the only time indeed in the tournament that Ireland got to that level of phases, because they were about to get knocked out.
So Saracens? Was it you that told me this, Tim? Either Saracens or Exeter in their prime used to look at hitting 7 phases because they believe after 7 phases,
that was Saris. I think it was 6.
Was it 6? It might have been against Exeter of all teams. Like, you get 6 phases and then defences will break down. By the time you got to 38, psychologically must be really difficult.
But they were made, so Ireland don't ordinarily do that. It's totally a function of the situation that they were in. But they were still making, they'd made about 50 yards in those 38 phases, and it was, but you could see, I actually think defending in that position is easier than attacking.
100%.
It's so much harder to attack because you have to, You're the one who's doing more yards backwards and forwards and more aggressive running, but you've got to commit like two, three players
there
to every ruck.
There must be.
Whereas defending, you don't actually have to commit to any rucks if you don't want to.
Right, Tim, you can go and report back to BT Sport with my new idea.
TNT Sports.
Sorry, TNT Sports. My new idea is this. Not just a phase counter, but there must be some metric to see when the phases are starting to slow down. So if you are going at your first 10 phases, probably ruck speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the ruck speed continues to be, on average, every five phases, you know, 2 seconds, the ruck counter is green. And as it gets slower, it changes colour to red. So the viewer can understand if the ball's more likely to get kicked or if they're more likely to turn it over.
But you could graph that with a trend line as well.
Yes.
To show the direction of the... Are they trending up? Are they getting faster?
Yes, I love it.
So if it stays the same, you're amber. If they're getting faster,
yeah,
it's green. And the graph goes up, the trend line goes up. If you're getting slower, which undoubtedly towards phases 38, that it was getting slower.
That's a great idea.
The problem is, if everything's... Because I think Ireland would much rather they have really fast ruck speed normally, because they don't want that many rucks. They want to keep moving the opposition around to create space.
Yeah.
So you might not get that many opportunities unless you're watching Exeter in their prime.
Sort it out, Tim. You've got some juice.
Well, you're making a big assumption that I've got anything to do with it, mate.
You've got some juice
there. I'm on the outside
now.
I'm with you on the outside.
Yes, the insurgents.
Well. No, it's what was I going to say? Talking to just the speed of stuff. I think the best description that was that it was like watching rugby double speed versus the game we saw earlier.
I love that. Yeah,
Africa.
Yeah, true. Now, shall we
and the skill set of both teams is just outrageous.
Oh, physicality, skill set, the whole lot,
everything.
If this is rugby, or I mean, the people I feel sorry for are the people that didn't watch this game. Because everyone should watch this. It should be in a big national event. This it's just incredible. It's incredible. There's such a spectacular thing going on, and people are not talking about it left, right, and centre.
But hey, here's a fact for you. Of the four semi-finalists, England the only one that topped their pool, the only unbeaten side left in the competition. So it must be favourites, right?
I think so. Anything can happen now.
Yeah. Shall we go on to talk about that England game then?
Yeah.
Poor Marcus Smith.
He will never be the same.
We really won't.
What was the description of his... he has a face that, like a Picasso painting at the end of the game. That was great.
He's such a handsome... He could have been in a boy band prior to this game. Such handsome, boyish good looks. And then Owen Farrell moved into fullback.
Can you imagine Quagga Smith with Marcus Smith's hair? It doesn't go together. Marcus, you have to change his barnet as well now.
So we always talk about... Well, idiots do anyway. About we must appeal to mothers. Mothers will not let that. Well, I'm telling you, if you've got a good looking son now and you were considering rugby for him, you're not doing it anymore, are you?
And all that is because Faz doesn't like Marcus Smith.
Yeah,
he doesn't like.
And there'll be people on the internet crying. It's about skills. It's about skills. It's disgusting.
JB, why don't you talk to us about Owen Farrell? Just tell us what you thought of Owen Farrell today.
To be honest, I didn't really notice him too much. I don't think this is really... it's a bit difficult for me to watch England because I'm so heavily supporting the opposition team.
Apart from Semi Randrandra.
Yeah, apart from Semi. Oh, he played really well.
He played really well.
Really well. He played like a number 8 who was let loose on the wing. He played superbly. England were very disciplined. I'll give them that. They were very disciplined. I don't think they were spectacular. I thought.
I think that's the best. It did cross my mind, Phil. That might be the best 40 minutes since 2019.
You might not be wrong. You know,
really.
I'm sure England. They started off.
But there must maybe 2020 and 2021. There may have been good games that I can't remember.
Yeah, I seem to remember they started the World Cup cycle better than they finished it.
Okay,
but certainly in Steve Borthwick and the last year or so of Eddie Jones's tenure. So a good 2.5 years, the best England have played that first 40 minutes.
Yeah, and they played a bit different to how they did for a lot of the tournament, and they played different to how they did in the second half. There was a lot more, it felt like to me, not seeing the stats on this, but it felt like there was a lot more box kicking in the second half, which ultimately ended up just giving the ball back to Fiji, and then invited pressure on themselves and Marcus Smith's face.
Yeah, I thought they played really well, and for 40 minutes, and they're going to need to...
Which 40 minutes are we referring to?
The first half. England played really well.
Okay.
Yeah, the
Did
two...
Did you not think?
The two tries...
I mean, they didn't blow me away.
Two tries, three penalties.
But hold on. Like, it's relative, yeah. It's like, if we're comparing it to Ireland, New Zealand, France, South Africa, yes. It was so-so.
I mean, but if you're comparing
it to every other England performance under Steve Borthwick, except for the odd 10-minute flash when they're two men down and desperately need to try and score, that was the best England have played. And they took... I had similar feelings, and we'll come on to the Welsh game in a bit. I thought at 10-0 down when Dan Biggar was lining up that kick, oh, this is... Wales have got this in the bag.
Mm,
and I was thinking, as England were 21-10, it's like, oh, this is done.
Yeah, I did. I completely agree. They
were so in control.
They were
playing a real mature game. They were playing with more width and ambition than I've seen England play.
Mm-hmm.
They were varying the kicking game really well. The forwards were on top.
Yeah,
Owen Farrell was dictating the tempo, and it just looked like a balanced back line. It just looked like a good international rugby team.
Yeah, I mean, they were disciplined. That was good. I do agree with the kicking strategy. Was it, you know, exactly what you'd expect, isn't it? It's a territorial-based game. This is what we knew was going to happen. I like that.
But it was different from what they've done, because for a lot of the tournament, they've kicked far more off nine than they did in the first half.
Yeah.
And I think in the second half, they kicked far more off nine. It felt like, certainly, they kicked far more off nine in the second half.
Yeah, Mitchell's kicking has not been superb, and was not... It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. I think
he hasn't got the excuse of no platform like last week, because actually the forwards did a decent job there. The Marcus Smith thing, one of the things I really noticed, and you see this with New Zealand, did it brilliantly well last night, and you saw it with South Africa a lot as well. When you have that playmaker at fullback, the flashing back on the blind side suddenly becomes a real weapon, and England used the blind side brilliantly, I thought, particularly in that first half.
Mm.
They really got some change out of that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, the brightest spots for me was that England looked like they had some real leaders out there. I thought Chesham was excellent. I thought Laws, he got bundled out very unceremoniously, but he's easily England's most effective tackler now.
Yeah,
which
is weird for someone who's so tall.
Yeah, and I thought Ben Earl.
Ben Earl was great.
What we said about Ben Earl before the tournament was that he is one of those guys so special, you just got to make room for him in the team, and they have done. And I think that is paying huge dividends now, because to me, he looks like the only world-class player on the field. He reminds me, I know we've already made this comparison once today, but I'm going to make it again because I really want to drive it home. It's like when Ardie Surveyor was coming through, and people were like, well, what do we do with him? Is he a seven? Is he a six? But he has to play. And eventually he nailed down the eight jersey, and now he's probably the first name on the team sheet. I see Ben Earl doing something very, very similar for England, because no one else is as athletic as him. No one else can run half the pitch from a half break. He turns things over. He hits things. He's bloody amazing. He's absolutely amazing. And to the point now that I was watching the game, I thought Tom Curry was the worst back row on the field.
He was actually poor. He probably was the worst back row on the field. I think that's perhaps accurate.
Yeah.
Could be injury, could be, as in, he's not played a lot of rugby because of injury and suspension, so he's still finding his way back into it, but he could be trying too hard, but he wasn't too hard.
Is definitely one of those things which is happening, because he spends most of his time trying to fight ineffectively, because I think that's just what he thinks he should do. But his breakdown work is poor, so he's not attacking the ball with both hands. He's attacking usually one hand, and he's lucky not to get pinged off the field. I mean, he's really fortunate. I thought some of the stuff he did around the breakdown was stupid rather than anything else. It was careless. But again, he's just trying to get as many turnovers. I will make the counter argument, which it did work. He didn't get pinged and it did slow down ball. And actually, that might be one of the reasons that Fiji struggled so much because they looked very naive in open play.
Mm.
You don't usually see, but they did in big chunks of the game. They were trying to run the ball at England, and they were getting turned over because they were naive at the breakdown.
Tim, can I just ask you, because in my mind, the flip from first half to second half was a bit of a change in strategy, a bit more conservative from England, a bit more box kicking. Is there anything else you think? Because it wasn't really... I don't think you can attribute it to the personnel changes that happened just kind of through the game.
I was trying to make sense of this myself because I don't honestly know. My sense was that they tightened up how they played a little bit.
Mm.
And I think they had a 11-point lead at halftime. So you mm-hmm. can kind of understand that. But I think that might be a lesson. And actually, that look at South Africa and France. That some of the rugby they played, when it was a 1-point game, was just rugby from the gods and just trying offloads and doing things. And I think fortune does favour the brave. And actually, if England should take confidence from the first 40 and just go, no, let's put it away when it's there.
Yeah.
Just take it to them. And I think that's the way that the best sides do it. But it did feel like it coincided a bit with the changes. I think.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Conversely to South Africa, who just Quagga Smith was just an absolute beast when he came on. I didn't really feel like anyone off the England bench made an impact.
Well, if they did, it's not in the way you were hoping.
Yeah. So Carl Sinclair, for example, I don't know. I'd have to go back and check. But it felt like the scrum suddenly was under pressure when Carl Sinclair came on.
Well, I mean, I think you're dead right there, Tim. Mm. And I think one of the most disappointing things about English rugby at the moment is the recall of Dan Cole. That should tell you everything you need. Now, that's not a knock on Dan Cole.
Mm.
Yeah,
far from it. That's just saying, like, if you've got to go back to a guy who's, let's be honest, we all thought his international career was dusted.
Done in the last World Cup final. Yeah. We thought that was it.
Yeah, and he's still here four years later. I mean, this is a real problem for England because he's the best option. So you're absolutely right. The fact that he's even there is an indictment on the ability of Sinclair and Stewart and everyone else, really.
And Joe Hayes,
yeah.
Many, many others.
So it makes sense that he'd go backwards. Maro did some good things.
I thought Maro had a mixed game. Yeah. I thought he did some good things and some bad things. I thought his strip and break was amazing. He got, when Laws got bundled out into touch two phases earlier, he got absolutely nailed.
Yeah.
By two of the Fijian forward.
Oh, and that smash, love watching. Like it was that one, and then Courtney Laws. Maro got smashed, and then Laws got smashed. Yeah,
yeah.
Like, that's what you just said, Phil. Sorry if I repeated it.
We don't. I mean, because the Fijians are so good at certain aspects of the game, offloading, attacking. People tend to overlook that some of their defense is awesome.
That was
actually oddly, like, I was a little not disappointed with Fiji. That's wrong. I think actually England contained them really well. But they played one out rugby most of the time.
Yeah, they do. They're quite disciplined. They're not necessarily what you think.
And sometimes when they tried to just pass it down the line, there was a lot of real poor passes. Like, the offloads are obviously incredible when they can get them going, but it was quite a simplistic game they played, just crashing it up. But the actual contact area, they were just
contact
so
area.
Physical.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's absolutely great to watch.
Yeah.
Luke Tangi is so
Tangi, he had to go off. Yeah. It was a shame when he went off far earlier than they would have wanted.
Yeah. Who else did I like? I don't need to speak about Bottier. Although, again, Bottier, in some respects, was contained. He wasn't as effective as he normally is.
Mixed bag. There was times where he... And I think this is right for the ref to be hot on it, where his hands hit the ground in front of the ball only for half a second, fraction of a second, and then he goes for the ball. Once your hands hit the ground, you're not supporting your body weight, therefore you've got to be out of there.
I am gutted that Fiji are out. I'm just reading through the team sheet now and how much I love some of these players going forward. And the fact that we want to see...
I look at the names on the back line, which is why I was slightly disappointed with how they played. But I'm flipping that around and telling myself that's because England did really well defensively, which I think they did. But look at the names. I just thought, again, it's 9-10, isn't it? Their 9 did not have a good game.
Lamar.
And Caleb Muntz isn't there. And Batiti scored a good try, didn't he? Or
yeah, he did.
He got. I
think this boy's a left winger, usually.
Yeah.
Is
but,
he?
But everyone outside of the halfbacks is like dynamite.
Yes.
But they just... But I was really disappointed with how little we saw from them, but I think that's because the halfbacks, if you put a good international halfbacks in that Fiji team, they'd be a proper handful.
Although Batiti threw an outrageous offload. It went forward though, but if it hadn't gone forward, it was a thing of beauty. I can't remember what he did, but it went out the back door and either someone dropped it or it went forward. I thought, bloody hell, if that goes to hand, that's like one of the moments of the World Cup.
Mm.
So, but not seeing not seeing Josh Tuosova again this World Cup is heartbreaking. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I also love watching the English team get manhandled. Particularly, Manu was quite good today. Manu wasn't his worst version.
Yeah.
You know, he was reasonable.
Manu was good. Marchant was good.
But I do love watching not being able to stop Tuosova.
Well, if you like England getting manhandled,
South Africa next.
Wait till next weekend.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm so looking forward to it.
That was the other thing that Marrow did poorly. The second Fiji try, the hooker where he burst through.
Yeah.
Marrow just...
Oh.
Marrow did a classic your man.
Yeah. Can I say something I really hate? I'm so glad the referee sorted it out. Ellis Genge, right? Ellis Genge is holding a Fijian.
The scrum half.
Yeah. And the Fijian's trying to get him off. And then, like... I hate his cry face anyway. He's got this annoying cry face, right? But then he's holding the scrum half, and then the scrum half slaps him. And do you know when, like, you see... who does this? Like, I guess press journalists do this. Like, as soon as you touch one, they go mental, like, he assaulted me! He assaulted me! He assaulted me! Do you know, they push, and then someone loses their temper, and then they have this, like, little hysterical, like, flip out. Well, that's exactly what he did to the ref, because apparently Frank Lomani slapped him. And he's up there crying his little face off, saying that Frank Lomani slapped him. And he was in the middle of holding the guy, like holding his shirt. I really hate that.
I would love to, in a parallel universe, where Owen Farrell slapped a Fijian player in the same way, I would love to listen to the podcast of you castigating Owen Farrell for doing it. I don't mind that it was just like crack on play.
Owen Farrell, that's another one. Owen Farrell, when the ref had made his decision... Like that silly wry smile and that shake of the head. England are awful at this. Like, they really do whinge a lot to the ref. And so do South Africans, by the way. South Africans were bad at it today.
It didn't lose
in the
game.
There was a lot of it tonight. A lot of it from both teams.
Yeah.
The Faf de Klerk, where he's got a nice clean sight of about 5 different players and deliberately passes. It's directly into the French player on the ground.
We actually said at the time, didn't we? I hope they lose the game.
Yeah. That is the kind of thing. And
hate it.
They've got, like, Faf did that when South Africa have got front foot rook ball inside, deep inside France 22.
Yeah.
And he does a stupid thing like that to try and win a cheap penalty. I thought Ben O'Keefe handled that really, really well. It's like, nope. If you choose to pass into him, the consequence of you passing into a guy who's lying on the floor
are entirely up to you.
Yeah. So Owen Farrell's listening to a decision. I think it's for a high tackle, actually. There was a yellow card for a high tackle or something. And it wasn't a red. And Owen Farrell's shaking his head.
Oh, yeah, the Hibosi.
Yeah, something like that. One. I thought, Jesus. You know, just you're there to listen to the information the ref has given you. Dan Bigger was awful.
I mean, Dan Bigger, he likes a moon more than anyone.
Dan Bigger, who I love, by the way, he's on the try line and they're defending and you can hear him shouting, he's holding on, he's holding on, he's holding on, he's holding on. He's right in the ref's ear. Benambi did it too.
They all do it.
Did you hear that?
They'll do what they're allowed. They'll do whatever they're allowed to get away with. It's down to the referees.
Advantage.
The least of that happened. The least out of the four quarterfinals that happened the least amount of times. Ireland, New Zealand.
Yeah,
because Wayne Barnes was the referee.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, Benambi, right at the bottom of the rock.
You do whatever you get away with.
Oh yeah, exactly. I don't disagree with it, but. I really hate it. The Genge one is so egregious, though. Genge is like such a cowardly one. It's just like...
The penalty actually came up for that as dissent.
Yeah, it did.
Rightly
so.
Yeah, I would be happy for more penalties for dissent.
Yeah. That's how you stop them doing it, because it was a knock-on, wasn't it? And then it went full penalty, because Genge's been an idiot. Thank you.
Take it.
God.
So England win? The final game we just kind of touched on there.
I've got one for you.
No. Go on.
Marcus Smith, is this going to happen again? Can it happen again? Is there anything of Marcus Smith to play again?
They can scrape him up and tape it back together. I don't think so. Now, we have spoken about Freddie Stewart and how he's playing before. I think that's only part of the equation. I think the other half of the equation is a situational one. Partly because Fiji don't kick as much as other teams.
And, correct.
And partly, I think, to try and make Fiji kick more than they would traditionally kick. Because I think it's quite an astute thing to say, if Fiji see a non-fullback at fullback, they might want to kick more, which means they're running less.
The kicking stats all for this game?
Fiji kicked the ball 20 times.
That's not low.
That's pretty low. So you're up at England 30. So it might not be low for Fiji actually. The France Island game at the start, France Island France New Zealand game at the start of the tournament was 40 apiece, which is the higher end.
Yeah,
20 is the lower end, but it might be more than Fiji in other games actually.
Well, Fiji against Wales, Fiji against Australia. In my mind, would kicking an awful lot. Like, far more so than I would expect them. Because I don't think they're the team that a lot of people say they are.
Well, they're not, like... There's a lot of clichés in rugby, like... Who knows what French term is going to turn up.
And they're all annoyingly right.
Well, this time, yeah. This tournament maybe has proved them wrong. Or Argentina have got a fantastic scrum, haven't they? Not as much as they used to, things like that. Fiji, the Fijian flair thing is not untrue, but people overlook just how good their set piece is these days and how big and physical their pack is.
Yeah, so Marcus Smith at 15, you don't think it'll happen again?
No,
I'm not saying happen again. I don't think it'll happen against South Africa.
So, yeah, I think it was very much situational. I think the time when it will happen against South Africa is if England are down, and this is what I've said all tournament, if England are down by 7 points with 10, 15 minutes to go, you might see it again.
Yeah.
You will not see it starting unless Freddie Stewart is injured.
With the intention of it being there to open up England's attack, do you think it worked?
First half it did okay. Second half, no. But again, to me, that was more a change in strategy. They were kind of moving away from that anyway.
It's such a big ask. I mean, Marcus Smith has not played fullback ever, I don't think, for Harlequins.
He never started. But I don't think it's that big enough. Like, I was looking at it and Marcus Smith frequently kick returns. Like, in this game, frequently the two players in the deep
for England receiving and returning the kick were Alex Mitchell and Owen Farrell.
Mm.
Like, it's not that bigger. I really don't think it's that big a thing. Until
I agree,
you get a team that start trying to pepper you with spiral bombs, something like that, which Fiji were unlikely to do. And if Fiji did, that's probably a benefit for England because it means they're going away from there.
So I don't actually think it's the high ball stuff which should be of concern, because a lot of the high ball stuff is actually targeted at wingers, you know, the contested kicks are at the extremities. Where I think it's a concern, and where he did really well, actually, to be fair to him, is that last man tackling. Now, I say really well. He got absolutely bounced a few times. But I can't imagine Freddie Stewart doing much better, to be honest.
He bounced him, but he was enough of a road hump to stop.
Exactly.
And how often do you see a total clean break, fullback last man, and it doesn't happen that often?
No, but it's kind of like a goalkeeper. Like, it has to be stopped. Like, it only needs to happen once. We had two games.
Yeah,
which by a score, these things matter.
Yeah, but then we've talked about this many times. Freddie Stewart defence is not Freddie Stewart's strong suit.
This is exactly the point I'm making. I don't think Freddie Stewart would have done any better than Marcus Smith.
Mm.
I think Marcus Smith, the road hump thing is exactly right. That's what he had to do. And, you know, after he'd got absolutely battered, I think Tuasova ran him over, like big time ran him over. And then when Radranda's through and he's just hunting for contact, that is terrifying. And he still did it.
Well, that the one advantage with Semi, he does seem to just go for the contact. When he's got one-on-one with the 15, he's just going for the contact.
Because he's a great winger.
Fiji kicking stats in their previous game. So it was 20 this week against England. They kicked 21 times against Georgia, so almost identical. 24 times against Australia and 17 times against Wales. Ooh. So this is like in the middle of where Fiji... So they've actually not changed their previous strategy, it would seem.
Their kicking was bad when they did kick, so I can understand why they don't do it very much.
Worst kicker...
At least they need more practice at it.
Yeah. Worst kick of the weekend... Jalibert's
amazing
penalty finder.
But he had two really bad kicks. One of them he got away with, though. Do you know when he went for, I think, a cross-field kick, and it just slices off his boot, and it looks like a grubber kick.
Mm.
And he got charged down, so no one really knew what happened.
He meant it.
Yeah.
That's what he'll say. The second one, that cross-field kick, not cross-field, touch finder. Jalibert actually just jump into that. I thought he did some incredible thing. Some of his running and stepping,
lovely player,
was amazing. Two bad kicks, and Etzebeth targeted him for his try.
Yes,
and just carried him over the line.
Another player to mention for that game, not player, person. It wasn't Ben O'Keefe.
Ben O'Keefe.
I thought he was awesome.
I think. The referee.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I thought the same thing, but I've seen a lot of negative comments about him. But I agree with you, JB, for what it's worth. Yes.
I've seen negative comments about referees all weekend. I thought all referees will make mistakes.
Mm.
Overall, I thought the standard refereeing was excellent. Although I will note that I thought they were far more liberal than they have been throughout the rest of the tournament, which I think for all of us, we are absolutely fine with.
Yep.
Like, take the Nick Tompkins headshot in the ruck as an example and compare it to the clear out that got an Italian try disallowed and a yellow card for an Italian prop.
Yeah.
I thought they were very, very similar scenarios. One was a yellow card and a disallowed try. One was crack on, lads.
Yeah.
And I thought if I was going to pick which of those two... directions I want the game to go, it's this weekend, absolutely. But it is a bit weird to like rip up the precedent that you've set for the previous 5 weeks of rugby in the knockout stages. I'm for it.
I don't know how you measure it, right? Because there'll be people on Twitter in particular, nerds. And maybe I'd fall into this category if I actually had a dog in the fight. Maybe if it was like a team I cared about. I might be very pernickety, like, they didn't pick up on that. That is the law. This is how it should be enforced. But the ultimate where you judge is the game good is, did you enjoy it? Did it flow? Did you enjoy it? And if it did, so I tell you one of the Ben O'Keefe moments, which I thought was really good. The easiest call in the world is to give Etzebeth a yellow card or a penalty for tapping the ball down. Because
yeah, it's
just such an obvious, like, immediately I thought, oh God, yellow card.
Yeah.
But to not give anything and then to be right about it.
Yeah.
Because that just looks, it felt like a yellow card.
Yeah.
He was right.
There was a couple of let the boys play moments over the weekend, wasn't there? There was that one. And then there was the Argentina Wales, because we were coming on to that game a little bit, that, like, not giving anything for when Nick Tompkins scored for an HIA. Now, I know there's quite a lot of Wales fans quite upset about that. And I, based on what we've seen, when you think back to where we were calibrated at the start of the World Cup, where Tom Curry got a red card.
Yeah, exactly.
It does feel like a different system now. But I like where we're at now, because there's some recognition that accidents do happen and that's okay. And actually, if it's about changing behaviour, well,
it's already
the Argentinian
been done.
Player was bent 90 degrees at the waist and was doing a regulation clear out, and Nick Tompkins was falling and he hit his head. And sometimes head contact will happen because it's rugby union.
Yeah, an accident. Yes. It's hard to change the behaviour of an accident.
Like, yeah. Yes.
Unless you're just saying, well, no, don't go for a clear out.
Someone's been saying this for years.
Yeah. To be fair. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you look at these games, right? No one's life expectancy has gone up after this weekend. Like, no one's chances of dementia have gone up. Have gone down after this week's games. Because that is the nature of the game. And there were no knockouts. You know, there are a few HIAs. But even the guys without HIAs would have had some serious TBIs this week. Because that is the game. And we all know what we signed up for. That is the game. Get on with it. Talking of getting on with it, before we go into Wales, Argentina, I went networking. Beardmore & Co, Independent Financial Advisors. Friday morning. Someone turned around to me. Big hand. Shook my hand. Said, hi, I'm Adrian. Who was it?
I know the answer to this already.
Same.
So I can't pretend like
I... Oh, I've already told...
you already told both of us.
Oh, I met Adrian Morley.
Absolute,
that's awesome.
Absolute legend of the rugby league, the cross-country. Yeah, Morley.
I was like, this is a big deal. This is a massive deal for me. Adrian Morley is right here. So, good old chat. He's in construction recruitment now.
Is he?
He is. Do you need any recruiting people?
Not right now.
No.
I'd always be keen for a chat with Adrian Morley, though.
I'll sort it out, yeah. Got his card upstairs. Big mates now. Big mates.
Big slice as well.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He looks like he still trains.
Yeah, I imagine he does.
Those rugby league guys are just... I've met a load of rugby union lads. Load them. And they're very impressive, like physically impressive. There's something innately scary about ex-rugby league players, though. I can't really put my finger on it. They're different.
They are. So they're different, and the amount of punishment they put their bodies through. Because it's... So I remember, I always go back to this, when Sam Burgess moved... all roads lead to Sam Burgess, of course. But when he moved to Bath in England, rugby union, they were talking about his involvements as either a 6 or a 12, 13, I guess, where he ended up playing some of his rugby.
Yeah.
But you'd be talking about, like, maybe in a big game, maybe 8 to 12 carries, 8 to 12 tackles.
Yeah.
And in rugby league, he'd be doing, like, more than double that on both counts, on...
Interventions are off through the roof.
Yeah, now obviously you're not hitting any rooks in rugby league, yeah. But it's still like way more. And some of these, I've just got Adrian Morley. Do you know how many league games of rugby or league and cup games, so club games of rugby Adrian Morley played in his
400.
Career? 400.
So let's say like 25 a year for, let's say, 15 years.
Yeah.
100. Yeah, so 350.
Yeah. 497.
What?
As well. So, including...
Jesus Christ.
Within that, 149 for Leeds Rhinos, 114 for Sydney Roosters.
Jesus.
Which is... That's quite a high standard.
It's pretty high.
And then 173 for Warrington Wolves. as well as 50 international, 53 internationals as well.
Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. Yeah, I always feel with these rugby league boys, it's meeting one, it's kind of like hanging out with a pet tiger. Like, for the most part, you're going to be okay, but it only needs to not be okay once.
Yeah, yeah. Is your pet tiger well fed today?
Yeah. If not, you
might,
on the edge.
You might be on the menu.
Yeah. Wow, that is a hell of a CV.
Incredible.
And
now,
was there any more CV? Andrew Morley thing, or you just say that you met him? I'm not knocking it. I love
about
it, but I'm just before we just checking. There wasn't anything more to the Adrian Morley. It was just that you met him and chewed his ear off.
Yeah, that was basically
nice.
No, you're his best mate.
I'm his absolute best mate now.
Is he going to come down crossfitting with you?
I'd say so.
Absolutely,
we're basically inseparable.
I'll just give you a little interlude then, a little France update. Well, firstly, actually, that Scottish fan that I recorded last week at the Stade de France,
yes,
went viral because someone else plucked the video and put it on their own channels. It was on Have I Got News For You on Friday night.
I know, I saw it.
Just before Ireland New Zealand was about to start, I was so pumped, I was so excited. I'd seen the Wales Argentina game, I'd made it into the middle of Marseille. I was by the little Temple Bar, the Irish bar in the middle of Marseille, right by the port, of buzzing. And then I got this little notification saying, you've had a copyright strike.
What?
On your YouTube channel. I'm going to find out who this is. I don't know what, but apparently I've spoken to some people and it's like, this is quite common. Someone has pretended they own that video of the Scottish fan.
Oh my God.
Have licensed it. Wow. And then a copyright struck me, the person who did it and uploaded it.
That is a joke.
Someone out there is basically the Ellis Genge of copyright banter.
I was livid. So I'm getting these copyright strikes, and then there's only so many times you can do things not on terms of service on YouTube before they just knock your account down. So I've disputed
our account,
but it's just like not only
be careful with it.
Not only did someone rip my video, put that content somewhere else, get millions of views that I get no credit for. But yeah, that I'm actually having people telling me off saying you can't have that video up there. That belongs to someone else.
That really is a kick.
The world just isn't fair, is it?
Absolutely livid.
That it really is a kick in the teeth. The second part of that.
Shocking. There was something else. I can't. I've forgotten.
It was going to be a happy story.
No. So I spent some time in Marseille I had a wonderful night last night. Real big night with the friend of the pod and egg chaser, North Dorset Sevens champion, Dave McDonald.
Oh, the boy.
D-Mac. Good lad.
D-Mac and Ed, who's a fantastic lad. And they put me up in their Airbnb. Thank you for that. Anyway, so we had... what was I saying? What was the point of this?
Update from France.
What was I? No.
Party drugs. You want to tell us about party drugs?
Oh, and I also saw Hugo again.
Very nice.
Good lad.
Oh, my God, my brain. Can you tell I had a big night last night? I can't remember what I was about to say.
And it's also nearly 12:30 in France as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm on the radio early in the morning. Oh, it'll come to me. I had a big night out in Marseille and something happened.
And copyright theft happened.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. Oh, I can't remember now. Doesn't matter. Oh, obviously, well, it wasn't important. Anyway, sorry.
Well, if it does
I had a great night. Lots of beers and good fun.
Excellent.
I love France and now everything moves to Paris where it's freezing cold apparently, so.
Yes, that makes sense. So, Wales, Argentina.
Wales.
Yeah.
That's a little bit.
10-0 up, bossing things.
A little bit upset about this one. I've got to say, I when they were winning, I was like, yeah, okay, I'm getting a bit behind this team. I do quite like them after all that. And then for them to lose it the way they did. Do you know, they are some people might whinge about how Wales lost refereeing decisions and so on and so forth. One man can actually take some actual blame for this, and that is Josh Adams and his stupidity to give away what I think was an absolutely vital 3 points.
It was. Just the kind of no arm.
What was he thinking?
Late hit. But totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
Totally. It was just a.
It's thick.
It was just a cheap shot. Yeah, yeah. I've said this for a long time. Very happy. We're players are brain dead. Mm. Like, so happy to see a penalty go against them.
And I.
So unnecessary.
Was that the 10-9? Was that to make it 10-9 or something? It felt important to me because I think it's just before the half.
Was that the one just before the half time?
I think it was.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And all of a sudden,
I think you're right.
It was not in control.
Yes.
And it's because of that stupid decision.
Yeah, that was the one to make it 10-9.
Idiots.
From being 10. Yes.
I think just to. I think I've already drawn the parallel earlier in the podcast, but when you draw the parallel with South Africa and Wales, and also actually the Wales and Argentina, just the two teams that were on show that day, the importance of the team that you finish with, because I remember when I saw the team announced, I was like, what happens if something happens to Liam Williams? And then you're like, okay, well, I'll probably have to put Lewis Rees-Sammet to fullback. He's not totally sure about that. And then it's like, what happens if a centre goes down? Probably have to put Josh Adams in or move Dan Biggar out one. And it's just, the two things you did not want to happen happened in that game. And Dan Biggar was not, he definitely wasn't 100%. His arm wasn't right. He wasn't passing fluidly. You could see when he was kicking, he was not mechanically, it wasn't great. So he was sort of patched up already. And then, but for him and Liam Williams to go off and Sam Costello to come on, yeah, it's just, they just didn't have the bench.
So what
they did not have the bench. And
well, that's because these players are literally all the players that Wales have.
Well, yeah. Oh, no. I totally agree. There's no other options.
Well,
there's no other options.
The only option is to roll out the mummified corpses of Justin Tipperick and Alan Wynne-Jones onto the pitch.
This is quite a nice. The Welsh story is quite a nice story, I think, because they have fought valiantly. I think as a team, they've done themselves proud. They're not a good team. I said this. I mean, they're a good bunch of blokes. They're not great individuals. Like, they're a good bunch as a team. They work hard together. The pack is lacking. Like, the backs have got some nice names. And then you just realise when you look at the bench, like, this is it. There's, like, that's it. There's no one else in all of Wales.
What I will say is that they're unbelievably fit and their attitude is outstanding. The ability for Wales to get on their feet and in the defensive line is incredible.
How hard
they're amazing at it.
And that's what you've got to like about them. You know, it just shows that the team dynamic in rugby is absolutely essential. I think they've done well.
And they have got some, as much as we talk about the old guard in this game and the old guard who've gone already, there is some talent there. It's whether it's enough. Like that back row, Morgan, Rafael, Wainwright, they're all young.
Yeah.
Tashunza and Dafydd Jenkins, they're young and talented. Rio Dyer looks good when he gets an opportunity going forward. Tompkins is still in his prime. So they've got... It's not all... Like, Wales are in a significantly worse place than some teams, but it's not all bad. It's not as bad as it could
be. This is kind of like when Iceland started winning football games. The fact they only had these players kind of worked in their favour because they had to play together all the time. But in what world would you pick a back row which is like 5'10", 6'2", 6'4"? I mean, we're talking plumbers and scaffolders here.
Yeah, but Morgan, he's a hell of a...
And just when you think you've seen everything Jack Morgan can do, he goes and does some ridiculous footwork, as he did in this game. He had an unbelievable step and gas.
Yeah.
He stepped like a winger.
Yeah, he's
a hell of a player.
He's good. He is good. The front row is not good enough. Second row probably isn't good enough. They've done remarkably well to get this far. They did bloody well to beat Fiji, frankly.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's a good point,
They were favourites coming into this, and I mean, my calls were all over the shop. I was thinking it would be a Northern Hemisphere. I was thinking we're possibly going to see a Northern Hemisphere whitewash. But so what do I know? But the Wales one, that was the one I most confidently called, and I think that was the case with many, many people. They seemed like, and I think they were, are a legit good rugby team. So just to flip it over, I think you've got to credit Argentina. Crema was outstanding. Santi Carreras had a really good game at fly half.
Yeah, agreed.
And what I found interesting, and I noticed this with New Zealand doing this to Ireland as well, I reckon this must be by design. And in terms of tactics and the way the game evolves, Argentina, like it looked like they were getting carved up. Luis Rhys-Samet had space and was an overlap on the edge the first four times he got the ball. And then he sort of butchered it. He wasn't very good at kicking with it. Anyway, that's by the by. The point is, I was like, oh, they're carving him up. But and it also happened with later that day, last night, with New Zealand defended quite narrow and gave Ireland the outside. And I think that might be what teams are doing now. We trust ourselves to be able to slide and cover if they get the outside, but we're not going to have anyone go through the middle of us.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happens. I mean, it's like the oldest... not the oldest saying, but like, if you're gonna concede, you concede out wide.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how you played club rugby for years and years. So it would make sense. You double up in the middle and you let people go out wide, and if they can do it, well, sort that out later.
Yeah, but you also buy yourself time, because unless you can do either pinpoint pass to a man going on at pace or a pinpoint crossfield kick, you're always going to, like, the time it takes the ball to travel out there buys you a few seconds to scramble.
Yeah. So when Rio Dyer makes that break, and Thomas Williams is it, and he gives it to Rhys-Samet, you think, this is the best finisher in the world. Like, he's right up there, and for him not to get in, wasn't their day, was it? Was not their day.
Hell of a tackle coming across there.
Mm. Oh, that was a hell of a
tackle.
Yes,
because he has to get, I mean, the Commons said it beautifully, but they have to get, he has to get his, like, his whole body in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Means a really tough tackle, that.
Yeah. It was a great tackle.
Can I just say that Argentinian fans are amazing.
I bet they are.
So they are brilliant.
We came across them in Tokyo. England, Argentina. They were fantastic.
I don't remember any of that.
We might have had one or two Lemon Strong Zeros on that day.
Like, I'll put it this way, they managed to, like, pogo during their own national anthem.
Pogo?
It's like they're all jumping up and down. Ah. Like, you look around and you just see blue and white just bouncing everywhere you look during the national anthem. They are absolutely mad for it. It's just awesome.
So Argentina being in the semis, I mean, they're not going to be favourites to win the game, but they're in a bloody good position because they're going to know their opposition very well. Mm-hmm. They played them before. They've beaten the All Blacks twice now.
Yeah. And
once from a hotel room.
Yes. And I think both of these teams, their weakest aspect is their front row, which means they match up quite nicely against one another.
Yeah. I would not be shocked to see them make a final.
It's not out of the question.
Surprise, not shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked would be maybe putting it too strongly, but yeah, surprised.
Yes.
I've just, mind you, the performance as Wales wasn't, how do I feel about it? It was good, but if you look at the quarters, there is a substantial difference in quality between two of the games and this game and the England game.
100%.
And no, correct. None of the four teams that played in the worst of the two quarterfinals, I don't think any of them played well enough to make me think, yeah, okay, maybe there'll be a challenge. Argentina might be the best of the rest, I don't know.
It's, I mean, I was watching that England game thinking, even when England were playing well in the first half, whoever they played, because this was before the France-South Africa game, it doesn't matter. France or South Africa are going to put 30 points on England.
Yeah, they are.
And there's nothing that I've seen today that makes me change my mind.
The only thing that might come into play is it's just a one-off game. Just things happen.
And the pressure, yeah. But it's the kind of thing that if you replayed it 100 times, I think 90 of those times, South Africa now put 30 points on England. I think 10 of those times, it gets a bit closer and a bit more interesting. Maybe two or three of those times, it gets close enough for England to actually win it.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that. So it's unlikely.
Argentina, New Zealand will be closer than South Africa, England.
Probably.
Tim?
But maybe because Argentina haven't looked...
Yes, I think...
They've not looked that great, though.
They've not...
No, they haven't. They were much better. And that was... They had a little bit more structure and game plan. So I was more impressed. But I still... Yeah, these are mismatches. Well, no, not mismatches. That's unfair. These are... You've got heavy, heavy favourites for each of these games. England just need to make it really ugly and drag South Africa as much as they can into a terrible game. That's their only hope, which is why I think we will see Steward back at fullback.
Yeah. Damning with faint praise of that.
And I, th- and I think
as bad as possible, get me Steward on the phone.
No, because they're going to try and draw South Africa into a kicking battle. They're going to slow it down. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's the best idea against South Africa.
No,
though.
I'm not either. I'm like, well,
but I think if you let the game go loose, they're just going to shred England.
You are right. Like playing fast and high tempo, I'm not sure I want to do that if I'm England. I don't want to get into an arm wrestle.
Both ways.
Yeah, this team can. They really can.
Gotta say, I will say about Argentina, back row is cool.
Yeah,
the centres are dynamite. I love. Chocobaris and
he has to go off quite early. Cinti
is the other guy.
I was unsure about him, but I can see why Checker is persisting with him now.
Because he's a big boy.
And Maroni coming off the bench is very nice as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope Chocobaris is all right for the semi. I remembered, by the way, what I was going to say about night out with Dave and Ed.
Okay.
D-Mac.
So. Did you know how they got to Marseille? They were caught up in the air traffic control, the air traffic control strike.
I've not watched the video.
They were meant to have a connecting flight. And loads of Wales fans and England fans were in this situation. So they were meant to fly via Munich. The Munich flight got changed to Frankfurt because of these air traffic control strikes. Then when they got to Frankfurt, they were told, oh, actually, your flight to Marseille has been cancelled. We'll put you on standby for a flight to Nice tomorrow morning. Are there any seats on that plane? No, you're on standby. So basically, so they decided to hire a car and drive 1,000 miles from Frankfurt to Marseille.
Oh, God.
With three other Welsh fans that they met who just happened to be in the same situation. And the five of them drove... Well, Dave Mack drove, but they were all in one little in a VW Passat, the five of them, driving through the night to get to Marseille to make sure they were there. They were great crack. It was awesome. But I made a video, as Phil just mentioned, you haven't watched the video. I made a video for our YouTube channel. And then what do you know? Basically, I've done the production work for another grassroots podcast. Who are having them on their podcast to tell them about this amazing story that the producers found. So I'm glad they're getting a bit of that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I quite like doing the work for the grassroots podcasters as well. It's nice that I can give something back.
100%.
It is nice. It is nice. And that's the thing about being podcasters ourselves. We're giving back all the time. So podcasts less fortunate than ourselves.
So a grassroots podcast that's staying at the Sofitel right in the middle of Marseille rather than the camper van. On the outskirts, like me, but that's fine. It's fine. I'm quite happy. I'll keep coming up with the content, and other people can keep.
Exactly right.
It's fine by me.
You keep going, Tim. You're doing a great job. Right. Do you want to do predictions, or should we save that for another podcast? I'm tired.
I think we save it for another podcast.
Let's do another pod.
But
we might need to talk about the Premiership. We might need to talk about the RFU again. We're getting behind on those things. We might need to talk about the predictions for next week. Got all sorts going on.
Yeah, let's save it for another pod. Let's save it for another day because it's nearly midnight as well.
God.
And I'm on a train in the morning.
God, I love podcasting. Love podcasting. I'll get enough of it.
Bloody love rugby. I really love rugby.
What a weekend.
Right.
And the talk about its impending demise might be a little premature, JB. Do you think after this weekend's rugby?
No, certainly not, mate. We are we're sort of partying whilst Rome burns. Yeah, this is it. This is the last throw of the dice. Enjoy it.
Oh, mate. Let, let, I'm happy to be here as it's going down. Then, if that's the case, if this weekend's got anything,
yeah, like we're basically ballroom dancing on the Titanic.
Bring it on!
Right, so follow Tim on YouTube. Download the podcast. Well, you already have downloaded the podcast, so subscribe to the podcast. Contact us.
Follow JB. Follow JB in very small shorts on Instagram.
Well, actually, they're quite long. They're very tight, but they're quite long. Well, I've got a few followers on Instagram this week. I don't know if they're horrified or you know, or what really. They're certainly not getting the content that they expected.
Well, if they were expecting extremely tight skin, extremely tight lycra shorts, and that's why they've added they'll be very happy with the channel.
If you like muscle ups, it's all there. Right. Yep, so do that, and we'll see you probably tomorrow or midweek with some more podcasts. So from me, Tim and Phil, let the boys play.
Beautiful.
Top work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.